Welcome to this edition of When the Biomass Hits the Wind Turbine, a discussion of sustainable living and what that means to you and me. I'm Jay Warmke.
I'm Annie Warmke.
You certainly are. And today we're going to talk about the business of living simply, or making your dream a reality. And this is basically a part two of deciding. You've decided you want to change your life. You want to go out there and live simply, whether it's a homestead, whether it's just having more time to read, whatever it is. And in order to make these ideas a reality, there's a process. It's like starting any business. And we discussed briefly about creating your mission statement, clearly identifying what it is you want to do. That's sort of step number one. Coming up with a plan on how to make that happen, sort of the in quotes business plan. Being honest with yourself about what you have to sacrifice, what you have to give up, what excuses you're telling yourself that keep you from meeting that goal, and then beginning to evaluate what kind of resources you have at your fingertips, people, skills, facilities, things of that nature that you can then turn to and make these, to basically make your plan happen. So that's how far we've gotten so far. Now, Annie.
Okay.
What do we do?
Well, next, we need to really look at a whole lot of other questions that we need to answer. And I think the initial thought is, what physical resources do you have? So maybe all you have is a car and some furniture, or maybe you have some tools. Or why are you smiling like that?
I'm strong like an ox.
Okay.
Well, I'm joking about that, but I mean,
no, that's
physically,
right. That's
can
right.
You do it?
If you're in a wheelchair, then that would change maybe some of the things you're going to do.
Like your goals might have to.
Well, or you might just have better equipment. But again, what are those things? What are those physical resources? And then we need to move on to, what is it I want to accomplish? So it's all fine and good that I've got this dream and I wrote down a couple of things, but what is it I really want to accomplish? So I want to change the world. I want to live in isolation. What are those things I want to accomplish?
I think it's also, as you're creating your plan, we didn't mention this before, set specific time goals. You know, if you always are leaving these things vaguely out in the future, but if you were to say, by this time next year, I want to have done this, this, and this, I think that makes these things happen. They're more likely to happen than if you just vaguely say, sometime in the future, I want to, lose weight, or I want to quit my
and
job.
And it's not the Bible. You know, you can change those things. You can change dates. But the other thing that's really important, which is what we're talking about in both of these segments, is you must write these things down. There are two reasons. One is because your brain needs that. It helps you it works with you when you're trying to figure out what you want to do. But secondly, it gives you something measurable because, frankly, when you're first starting out, it can seem like you're not making any progress. And if you can come back and revisit the notes that you made for yourself, that helps you sometimes to see, even though it was a very small step, you made change, you made some steps further towards your goal, or that maybe it's not even that you're ever going to get to your goal, it's how you get to that goal, and it's showing you how you're doing that.
Well, and you say you're not making any progress. It made me smile a little bit because we were just doing a project where we installed a solar array on a home, and it always strikes me in any job, there's a lot of spinning your wheels as you're getting started. Everybody has to kind of get into the gear.
Yeah.
You get into this thing, you know, you and then when you're focusing on it, with the solar array as an example, placing that first panel or the first thing takes 20 times as long as any of the others, because once you've got that thing set, everything keys off of that. And that's true in carpentry, it's true in that, but it's true in any business,
in life,
it's true in life. I've set it up, I've got this thing perfectly aligned, now it's just almost cookie cutter. Now I'm going to move down the production line.
Yeah. So the next thing that we have to identify, and this is super important, is what fears do I have? I would say that fear is the biggest thing that holds us back in this culture. Our culture is ripe with fears about everything from insects to war to violence. And some of it is justified, but not to the point where it holds us back. And so we have all these fears built in about, I can't do it, I'll go broke, I'll be bankrupt, I'll die, I'll be injured, whatever those fears are. And we need to identify what they are. And then we need to change how we talk to ourselves and realize that if we're speaking to ourselves, according to this studies, at 15,000 words a minute, and we're telling ourselves we can't do something, guess what? We can't. So we have to look at those fears and say, what are they and how am I going to change that? Or are they realistic? You know, going bankrupt is maybe a realistic thing, but then there's a flip side to that too. And then what are the risks?
Okay, but don't move off the fears, because fear is very real, you know.
And I'm not dismissing it.
Of the two of us, I'm the one who is the fearful one, right? I'll sit there and say, well, when we talked about quitting jobs and moving, and I was like, what about insurance? What about money? How are we going to do this? I mean,
and what did I say?
What about status?
And, yeah, what
and
did
all
I
of
say?
These things. I blocked it right
you
out.
You did
of my,
not.
No, you were saying all of these things are an illusion.
Yes.
Security is an illusion. Money is an illusion. Insurance is an illusion.
Fear
all
is an illusion.
All these things. Well, you know, I mean, it's an illusion. The thing we fear probably will not come to pass, yet the fear is real. So we have to recognize the fear.
You mean the feeling of fear, because oftentimes the reality is that it's all just conjured up in your head.
And I remember the quote from Mark Twain I always liked is like, I'm an old man and I've had many troubles, most of which never happened.
Yeah.
You know, it's that kind of thing about those things I fear are not necessarily going to come to pass.
Or real. They may not even be real. So just let me say that I don't think I'm a particularly brave or courageous person. I think I just say, all right, look, those things are real, and I want to put them into the formula, but they're not the only thing in the formula. And I have the ability to see the goal. I see it when it's finished. And I'm always walking towards what that looks like. It's important to me about how I get there, and I may never get to the goal, but I'm going to make it happen at some level, in some version, in some percentage. And I'm only going to, I want fear to be in the mix so it helps me to do a better job.
Well, the thing that helped me, and not to belabor this too long, but I got to a point where it's like, okay, I'm afraid of doing this, I'm afraid of doing this, but then I remind myself, look, you only have one life. I do not want to live it dictated to by my fears, you know. And I remember that line from one of those Indiana Jones movies or something where he goes, bring it on. I'm tired of
that's
all this
exactly,
sneaking around.
That's exactly,
you know?
What I say. So, just bring it on. Let's see everything. Let's see the
face
colors.
It.
Let's see what it's made up of, because we're going to tear it down. And that's exactly how I try to look at things. And so I think when you're saying that, the other thing that comes to mind is something we don't say often enough, and that the real value of doing these things is the people who are involved. So we need, you have in me a partner who is encouraging you and saying, let's be realistic about what the irrational part of this is. We have friends who have been really great, and family members who've been terrific in talking to us and encouraging us and telling us when to back off and things to think about. And this just reminds me of the value, the tremendous value of those relationships, because they help us to get past fears and irrational thinking and stupid mistakes, and encourage us when we do make mistakes and say, look, this is learning. It isn't the end of the world. So all those things are important. The other thing is that I think those relationships help us to identify risks. And that's a real valuable thing. That's not about fear. That's about saying, if I spend this amount of money and I haven't figured out about cash flow, the risk is I may lose the project or the car or the farm or my relationship or whatever that is. But what are those risks? The building may fall down if we don't frame it up properly, or somebody leans on it before it's ready to be leaned on. These are all things that happen.
What, you fool? You touched the wall.
I know. I'm just saying, what are the risks? And we need to identify that. But it's very different than the fear factor.
Right. And you can mitigate. You can anticipate those risks and try and plan for them.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. And even if you didn't think up one in particular risk, you're saying to yourself, okay, I'm ready for that. Bring it on. Whatever sure. it is, I'm going to decide how to deal with it. I'm not going to just think it's the end of the world.
I remember when we did our plan, we had kind of mapped out a five-year plan, and we said, okay, the first year we're going to lose a lot of money. Second year we're going to lose not so much money. The third year, maybe not quite so much money. And it was really 5 years before we were going to have enough income to pay for our expenses. So we were saying, okay, we need to be capitalized for 5 years. And in the early days, people would say, so how is your business going? I say, we're right on schedule, man. We're losing lots of money.
Bleeding, we called it bleeding. Mm-hmm. So the next step is, who will try to stop us? So that might be the neighbors, because you're looking at a piece of land and the neighbors are really totally the opposite of who you are as a person, or maybe they don't like the fact you're coming into their neighborhood.
Oh, the ones that are going to stop you for sure is your family. I mean, you know, your parents are going to say you're crazy. I paid for this college education and now you want to raise tomatoes. You know, how dare you? You know, some of your friends, your colleagues are going to say, how can you reject this world, these goals that I hold dear? If you're rejecting them, you're basically telling me that my life is a sham. How dare you do that to me? There will be anger. There will be, I mean, real
anger. I had
anger.
People I had been friends with for a long time after we moved to Blue Rock Station, women who said to me, you know, you need mental health counseling. After you get it, come back.
Yeah.
And I admit that.
Well,
I'm
let's
struggling.
Not dismiss that advice here. maybe they were on to something.
Well, right? Maybe I did need advice, but uh-huh. I think it was mainly around their friendship.
I think you just needed to move to the country and raise goats, right?
I had already done that. So, but anyway, I think it's valuable to say, who's going to try to stop me? Maybe it's the local planning commission, maybe it's the Chamber of Commerce. Maybe it's your minister, but be honest about who are the people who are going to bring those negative comments or try to create fear or unreal expectations, because then you see it coming and you're prepared for it. And it's not going to knock you off of where you are, which is really valuable.
Well, and if you read almost any biography of any great person who has accomplished things, they're constantly being told, you cannot do this, you should not do this, told a million reasons why it can't happen. So I think what we're saying is, if your vision is strong enough and if your motivation is strong enough, just know there will be people in your life, people you really care about, who are saying, don't do it, don't do it. You know, they'll try and stop you from that.
Well, because they don't want, they're afraid of making change. You know, change is the one constant in life. The cells of your body are always changing. The earth is still moving. And so this is reality. And instead of experiencing that and saying it's all good, we're saying, oh, my heavens, something bad's going to happen if we rock the boat in some way.
I think they think you're making a judgment on them as well. Because if you're saying, I reject society as it exists, then you're saying, I reject you as you exist.
Well, that's why we have to focus on what we have in common. And sometimes that's a pretty hard thing to find.
Mm-hmm. Well, you are listening to When the Biomass Hits the Wind Turbine with Jay and Annie Warmke. Reminding
that
you that it is indeed the end of the world as we know it.
And thank God.
Thank God. And today we're talking about essentially, how do you make this vision of a sustainable life, whatever that may be, because it's different for every single individual, but how do you take that from being an idea to being reality?
Well, one of the things is, how are you going to make a living? Because a lot of times when you want to make these other changes,
details.
Then it also means that you can't really keep doing what you're doing, because maybe you don't agree with it, or maybe it's counter to your belief system, or maybe it's just not in the place where you're going to be living, because you're going to live somewhere else. So I think what you have to do is also make some lists of activities that you might be able to do to earn a living, or activities that, let's say you have some resources, maybe you have a piece of land or whatever, of things you might do that would appeal to the public who might want to come there and take a walk in your forest or hang out with your pigs or something like that. So what are those things that you could do that would appeal to other people who might be willing to give you a few dollars? So just to give some examples, when we were first building the house, we were just doing that in the summer, and building an earthship was quite a big deal. And so lots of people wanted to come, and it drove me crazy because I was trying to build a building in just a few months over the course of a few years, and I only had that time. So people would just show up. So I decided I would start charging money, and then more people wanted to come. And so by the time we were actually living at Blue Rock Station, thousands of people had already been there and looked at what we were doing. And then we said, well, let's just charge more. That we thought that would bring less people, and let's make it so it's only once a month and things like that. And that just brought more people. So then we said, let's have less people. We're going to keep them to a minimum because we want to build relationships. But that house has earned us a living, and it did it because we were identifying that that was one way we could make money with the public. And it promotes itself because people are fascinated by our lifestyle and the buildings that we've built and the building we live in.
Well, I think we've also found that it's good to have multiple income streams because
yes.
not everything's going to work. So you may have 10 ideas and you think they're drop-dead gorgeous ideas, and it turns out the rest of the universe doesn't necessarily agree with you.
That's right.
So all of a sudden you have 10 ideas and only two of them are really working out the way you envision them. Well, that's two that work. So keep those, maybe come up with eight new ideas, and out of those, maybe one or two. But we've also found it's weird because these ideas are not forever blooming, you know? I mean, we may have one revenue stream that's doing great, and then as time goes by, it gets less and less, and then something else comes up. So,
but then it comes back. Like, we do these Earthship weekends where you can come and stay, and we work with people around planning all the stuff we're doing over these two or three episodes. We do on that weekend, and it's fascinating because there was a time period where we had nobody signing up, and now we are full every single time. In fact, people right. will sign up months and months, like in January, for the one in September. They want to make sure they have a space. So again, it's just continuing to say, I've got a good product, and I know it's a good product, but it's not, its time isn't good. And then we see as the economy starts to tank, we see more people interested in certain things. We pull back other things. So we've got a basket full of all kinds of things that we can pull out to try to make a living with. And they're all fun. They're interesting. We learn new things. We meet new people. We make friends. So it's all good. It's just that we have to have the courage to keep trying and saying, all right, we're going to back off from that, try something else.
Well, and we also, because we do a lot of planning as part of our process, where we have an annual planning meeting and we sit down and we map out for the next 5 years now. We used to do for 10 years. We actually, and I think this is something that's good to bear in mind, look 3 or 4 or 5 years into the future and say, what do we think is going to appeal to people in 4 or 5 years? And let's begin building that as well, knowing that it's not going to come of age for 3 or 4 years or 5 years. Sometimes it never works. Sometimes we hit it just right.
Of the time it morphs into something.
Yeah.
Because we are pretty good at figuring that out. But I think that's a skill set, and maybe that's why most small businesses don't succeed, is because, first of all, they don't have enough cash. They're not cash rich to get through the hard parts at the beginning. But secondly, they don't have the ability to constantly be analyzing and changing. And that's what capitalism is. And we, while I don't think we're capitalists, I think we're good at capitalism. And that may not make sense, but it makes sense to me because everything else we do does not lend itself to capitalism. So that brings me to the point of, it says, what motivates me? And if you're going to live on a farmstead or a homestead or be living more simply and you need to earn a living or find ways to get through life, you've got to figure out how to motivate yourself. Now, I know lots of us are really self-motivated. We get a lot of self-esteem from how hard we work and how much we produce. But there are lots of folks that are somewhere far from that. And it doesn't mean they can't achieve things, but they don't do it at the same level. And so it's super, super important to say, what is it that motivates me? A lot of times it's because they want more time with their family, so they're willing to do less or work less away from home. I can be super motivated if I think there isn't enough money to pay the bills. Fortunately, I haven't had that feeling for a long time, but I can really get motivated and animated when I think that the cash flow isn't going to be what we need it to be.
But if you're solely motivated by money, I think my experience anyway, and I think yours, is that those people who are solely motivated by money usually are very displeased with what they're doing. Because money's not in and of itself.
Well, some people really love just the act of making money, and so they're not unhappy.
Right, but they don't like the thing they're doing that has to make them
maybe,
their money.
I don't know. I just think we have to identify. It doesn't matter what it is, but what is it that motivates me, and what is it that could motivate me? And that's really valuable. So the other thing is, who will my goals benefit? And how do I maintain the motivation I need to meet those goals? So it's super important to identify, how will those goals benefit me and in what way? How will they benefit my family? In what way? My work, my future. That's super important. You were just talking about planning. My neighborhood and my community, because you don't live in an abyss. You live in a place, maybe like our neighbors aren't, you know, right next to us, but they are still impacted by things that we do or don't do. They impact us all the time. For example, the guy across the road likes to spray with chemicals, which actually caused one of my goats to abort once. So now I have signs that say no spray, organic. He has changed. He's still spraying, but he's spraying differently. He's not massive spraying. He's only spraying his fence row. And so, again, everything we do or don't do influences and impacts somebody. And it's vital to know, if we're going to change our lifestyle, how that's going to influence us.
Well, and when you talked about us being capitalist, first off, it sort of cracked me up a little bit. I just remember years and years ago when I was going to make our millions in real estate. And so we had a bunch of rental properties, and we were cleaning up one for like the fourth time after a tenant left and had trashed the place, and we're painting, and you were just looking at me with the most sad, pathetic look on your face, and you said, "I don't want to be a capitalist anymore," you know. So as part of our business plan, we were saying, if we are going to generate revenue, can we do this in a way where other entities benefit as well? So we do this with our solar classes and the like, where you work with a nonprofit and you say, we are going to share these revenues with you if you share some of the activities, such as marketing or facilities or things like that. So so they benefit, we benefit. It's a nice social entrepreneurial kind of mindset. And that's one of those examples of saying, okay, we need that to keep us motivated. If it was all about us getting everything, I don't think we'd be that enthused.
No, but it's the same with our interns. They bring such great joy to life, and new books, new information, new films, new music. I don't think we'd still be in business if we didn't share our lives with
We would not be the rap music enthusiasts that we are today.
We aren't the rap music enthusiasts.
Oh, I forgot.
Yeah,
I forgot.
You did. Yeah. So next is, who would be excited about what I want to accomplish? This is super important. This could be anything from people who are interested in some of the topics that you're interested in, whether it's carpentry or chickens or whatever that is. But it also would be people in your own support group, identifying, pulling those people out and saying they would be excited about what I'm about to do or thinking about doing. I remember when your best friend was, he just thought you'd lost your mind when you left the corporate world and all the perks and everything. And he used to come and see us when we were living in Europe, and he was still like hunting, what is it you're doing? And then at one point you're like cleaning horse stalls.
I was working up in a stable, yeah, and I was mucking out manure, and he was just looking at me with such this pathetic. He's like, you used to be an important person, and now look at you. And I said, you know, listen, Paulo, it's pretty much the same job, right? I'm still
shoveling the poop.
That's right. I'm cleaning up after other people.
That's right. Right?
I said, it's like going to a board of directors meeting.
We're coming out of the board of directors.
Except the horses are more appreciative.
Yeah. Well, and then, but then he didn't give up on us. You know, that's a true friendship. And he's a brilliant man. And he came to see us a couple of times. And the first time he came, you were teaching something about solar ovens that we made. We called the couch potato ovens. And he was just sitting there and he was just lost in something. And then he turns to me and he said, now I get it.
Yeah, he says, I see how you can make a living doing this. To him, it was like, how can you make a living? How can you do this? I do not understand how it is you can generate revenue with this thing that you're trying to do.
So the other thing that we have to look at is who would be frightened by what we want to do. So this could be our life partners. It could be people in the community. People can be easily intimidated. Remember, the fear factor is involved in everything. So we have to understand who those people are and try to be proactive around that. I don't think we can change that, but we can plan for it. And that's important to have that on our list if we're thinking about what we're going to do. We also need to be really aware of all the different kinds of people we need in order to operate our life. And that includes people like accountants. If we're going to have a business of some sort, we're going to need to know probably an attorney. And do these people understand what we're trying to accomplish? Or are they people from our old life and we need to get new ones? How about our neighbors, the sheriff, the game warden, government officials, economic development people? How are they going to figure into, are they frightened by what I'm doing? Are they supportive? And in what way could they support or detract from what I want to do?
So now you're in the stage where you said, I've identified what it is I want to do. I've created a plan about how I'm going to approach it. I've identified income streams, and I've identified some obstacles and some challenges that we may meet in meeting this plan and implementing this plan.
Right.
So anything else? Any other words of wisdom as we come to the end here?
Well, the words of wisdom is you're going to have to stay tuned for the third in the series, because we have some really important things still to talk about.
Yeah, the very last step is buy a lottery ticket and win. And then
That's the dumbest waste of hard-earned money.
All right. Well, you have been listening to When the Biomass Hits the Wind Turbine with Jay and Annie Warmke. We want to thank our Emmy Award-winning producer, Adam Rich, and we want to thank you for spending just a little bit of time with us. And as your grandmother hopefully told you, the secret to a happy and sustainable life is...
Don't buy lottery tickets. Place nice with others.
Place nice.
Place nice with others. Clean up your own mess and eat your veggies, Jay.
Okay. Till next time.
Bye-bye. Sing, and her children will be
You can find more information on living sustainably in our unsustainable world at BlueRockStation.com.